Let's turn to the Bible, Genesis chapter 1, chapter 31, beginning with verse 1, reading from the New Living Translation. The word of the Lord is as follows. But Jacob soon learned that Laban's sons were grumbling about him. Jacob has robbed our father of everything, they said. He's gained all this wealth at our father's expense. And Jacob began to notice a change in Laban's attitude toward him. Then the Lord said to Jacob, "Return to the land of your father and grandfather and to your relatives there, and I will be with you." So Jacob called Rachel and Leah out to the field where he was watching his flock. He said to them, "I've noticed that your father's attitude toward me has changed, but the God of my father has been with me. You know how hard I've worked for your father, but he has cheated me, changing my wages 10 times. But God has not allowed him to do me any harm. For if he said the speckled animals will be your wages, the whole flock began to produce speckled young. When he changed his mind and said the striped animals will be your wages, then the whole flock produced striped young. In this way, God has taken your father's animals and given them to me." Thus far, the word of the Lord. He said, "I've noticed that your father's attitude toward me has changed, but the God of my father has been with me. You know how hard I've worked for your father, but he has cheated me, changing my wages 10 times. But God has not allowed him to do me any harm." This is part two of Words Along the Way, and the title is simply, "But God." But God. The story of my life is the stuff of which great dramas are made. It has intrigue, subterfuge, romance, suspense, and comedy. Those of you who have read the narrative of my life, being Jacob, will find that there is a fundamental tension around the source and sustenance of purposeful living. On what or on whom does the purposeful life rest? You see, a good part of my life was centered around what I tried to do, what I tried to make happen. In the womb, I jockeyed for position against my twin brother. I didn't know that God's purpose for my life had more in mind than what I could achieve by maneuvering. And therefore, from the womb, I was all about maneuvering, positioning, and striving. As I grew up, the dynamic of our home was of the sort that it only fed that behavior. My father favored my brother Esau, while my mother favored me. And so as I was trying to make my way, make things happen on my own, I bribed my brother Esau out of his birthright. And then with the help of my mother, I deceived my daddy Isaac into giving me the blessing of the firstborn. Now, what we did not factor into that was the degree of Esau's rage, and that led to me having to flee out of fear for my brother's wrath. My mother advised me to go to Padan Aram in Haran, where her brother, my uncle Laban, lived. I didn't waste any time. I made my way there, and Uncle Laban welcomed me with open arms. Uncle Laban became a lifeline for me, and I immediately fell for one of Uncle Laban's daughters named Rachel. It was that immediate imprint. As a matter of fact, the first kiss that we had, I literally cried. It was such a strong desire that I worked 7 years for her hand in marriage. You got to tell me. You know, a brother was sure enough sprung, whip, nose wide, worked 7 years for her hand in marriage. I can't tell you how excited I was on the day of our wedding. I was so excited that I didn't check to see who was under the veil. And the next day I discovered that it was Leah rather than Rachel under the veil. So I agreed to work another 7 years so I could have the woman that I really love named Rachel. Man, those years flew by. And not only did those years fly by, but God favored the work of my hands and also blessed Laban. God considerably increased the livestock holdings. I mean, we had a good thing going. I was working, God was blessing, and Laban was receiving the increase. I mean, business was booming. And as I saw how well things were faring, I requested some form of revenue sharing by way of livestock. And so Uncle Laban said I'd receive all the black, speckled, and spotted goats and sheep. And I was cool with that. I would maintain them. I would grow them. And God blessed the efforts. It's in the midst of that that I began to notice some subtle changes to Uncle Laban's attitude. It wasn't immediate. A lot of it began with the grumbling of Laban's sons. Their discomfort and their grievance began to feed into his discomfort and his grievance. Because it is often the case that the changes in people towards you is prompted by the feelings and thoughts of others. Other people's grievances, other people's gripes become theirs without you having done anything to them to engender them. They are just coming under the influence of other people. And such was the case with my Uncle Laban and with my cousins. And it's within the change of climate that God directs me to return home. Now, you need to know that God telling me to pack up and go back home is not synonymous to God telling somebody who just graduated from college pack up and go back home. No. This was totally different. For God to tell me to pack up and go back home, God was telling me to go back where I fled, to go back where there were outstanding issues that I would have to face, to go back to where there's my brother's anger and perhaps my daddy's disappointment. I left so much unresolved that was all on me. And yet God was now telling me that I need to go back where I left things unresolved. And in that direction, God was calling me to overcome my fear and my pride. Well, now, if I was going to do that, I would have to tell my wives that we'd have to go. And so I call a family meeting in the field, Leah and Rachel, with our moving as the subject of discussion. And I began with these words: I've noticed that your father's attitude toward me has changed, but the God of my father has been with me. You know how hard I've worked for your father, but he has cheated me, changing my wages 10 times. But God has not allowed him to do me any harm. See, friends, having experienced Laban's patronage, I was now experiencing his animus. The patronage that served as the context for achievement and success had now shifted to an antipathy fed by suspicion and jealousy. The actual word that I use when I said change, that speaks to the notion of disfavor signified by the turning of one's face. That is, rather than looking towards me, Laban was now looking away from me. It references a malcontent. And that's the thing about people. People can and often do change. They change in their thoughts about you, their feelings for you, and their commitments concerning you. And life would be quite tentative if its plans and prospects were based upon the consistency of people's thoughts, feelings, and commitments. If your life was based on how consistent people's thoughts, feelings, and commitments were about you, your life would be going up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down. But there are two words in the story of my life upon which the plans and prospects for my life hang and hinge, and those words are, but God. Just those two words make all the difference in the world. But God. People may change, conditions may change, circumstances may change, climates may change, commitments may change, but God. I believe that there are those who've discovered the two words, but God, are the only words that accurately, appropriately, and adequately describe how you've survived, been sustained, and achieved whatever degree of success that you've enjoyed. But God. You've had people, places, factors, and forces change, but God. You've been hit by faults and failures and stresses and struggles, but God. You've had losses and letdowns, but God. But the God of my father has been with me. In the absence of my father and with Leah and Rachel's father changing on me, my life is sustained by the presence of someone else, the God of my father. The word for God used in this instance refers to the true God, the real God, the absolute God, the true God, the true creator, the true maker, the true sustainer, the true God who is power personified. That God has been with me. With all that has changed, the one thing that has not changed, the one who still is with me, who keeps me company, who remains present, and whose disposition toward me has not changed, is the true God. My life has been sustained and supported by the perpetual presence of the Lord. I wanted them to understand that if you stripped everything from me, the one constant that you would find is the perpetual presence of the true God. And the reason why I'm emphasizing the true God is because we often attribute our sustenance and success to false gods. We attribute ultimacy and power to other people and other things who are not God. And the problem with that is that all of those people and things are subject to change. And none have the power to give us any power because they are not sources of power. The only source of real power is God. Power belongs to God. My life hinges and hangs on the perpetual presence of the true God. People, circumstances, situations may swing and shift, but I'm held and upheld by the perpetual presence of the true God. And I need somebody to know that as a child of God, you are held and upheld by the perpetual presence of the true God. Now, when I say but God, I'm saying several things, and I just want you to know what I'm saying when I say but God. When I say but God, I'm expressing the fact that I'm blessed by God's covenantal continuity. I'm blessed by God's covenantal continuity. The perpetual presence of God about which I speak is in terms of covenantal continuity. It's the God of my father. You see, this God's presence did not begin with me. He's the God of my father. He's my daddy's God. He's the God who promised the birth of my daddy to my grandfather and grandmother and then empowered them to conceive and give birth to him. He's the God who brought laughter to grandmama when he was born and removed the stigma that had surrounded her. This God whose power brought my daddy into the world is also the God who showed himself Jehovah Jireh when, after commanding my grandfather Abraham to offer up my daddy as a burnt offering, that God had a ram in the bush to take my daddy's place and gave my granddaddy the testimony, "The Lord will provide." My daddy's God is also my granddaddy's God, who called him to leave his family and homeland to go into a land that he would show him. He promised to multiply my granddaddy's seed and make him into a great nation. He promised to be with him. He gave my daddy the same promise, and having given my granddaddy and my daddy the promise to be with them, the true God met me. As I was on the run from Esau, as I slept, he spoke to me in a dream where there was a staircase that went from earth to heaven, and there were angels ascending and descending. At atop the staircase was the true God, who then spoke to me and said, "I am the Lord, the God of your grandfather Abraham and the God of your father Isaac. The ground you are lying on belongs to you. I'm giving it to you and your descendants. Your descendants will be as numerous as the dust of the earth. They will spread out in all directions, to the west and the east, and all the family, the north and the south, and all the families of the earth will be blessed through you and your descendants. What's more, I am with you, and I will protect you wherever you go. And one day I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have finished giving you everything I have promised you." I mean, as he promised to be with them, so did he promise to be with me. And as he was with them, so has the Lord been with me. I've been blessed by a covenantal continuity. That is, the God who was God to my forebears is the God who is God to me. His perpetual presence has not changed. There's been no degradation. There's been no lessening. There's been no diminishing. There's been no wearing down. There's been no reduction of his presence. He's been with me in all that he is. And all that he is all that he's ever been. And all of him has been with me by way of covenantal continuity. He promised to be with me, and he's kept his word. He's been with me. He promised to be with me wherever I went. He's been with me wherever I've gone. And the thing about it is that he covenanted with himself first, and then he covenanted with my grandfather and with my father and with me. And so when I say that he keeps his word, that I am being blessed by covenantal continuity, I am saying I am being blessed by the one who promises himself to himself and then promises himself to me. And because he will always keep what he says to himself for himself, he will always keep what he says to me, because he will do it for his own name's sake. My brothers and sisters, when you say, "But God," you speak of God's perpetual presence, demonstrating God's covenantal continuity. God is the God whose presence indicates that he is keeping his word. He is the God who promises to be with you, who promises to never leave you nor forsake you, who promises to be with you when you walk through the waters and through the flood and through the fire and through the flames. And he keeps his word as a matter of covenantal continuity. He's the God who kept his word, who keeps his word, and who will keep his word for no other reason than the fact that it is his word. God doesn't keep his word based upon you or based upon me. God keeps his word based upon the fact that he is not one that he should lie, nor is he one that he should change his mind. If he said it, he'll do it, and if he spoke it, he will bring it to pass. When I say, "But God," I am being blessed by covenantal continuity. But when I say, "But God," I'm saying something else. I'm saying that I'm being protected by God's providential purpose. Providential purpose. You see, with Laban's change of attitude and demeanor, there was now a change in Laban's motivation and purpose. Laban no longer looked at me with favor in mind. His intentions shifted from that of good to now ill. But my life was not governed by Laban's purposes. My life was governed by the purposes of God. And the thing about God's purposes is that God's purposes were not circumstantial. They were providential. They were based upon what God decided within himself and would work through the course of my life. And God would use every circumstance that changed to accomplish his purpose that had not changed. I'll say that again. God would use every circumstance that changed to accomplish his purpose that had not changed. That is to say that the changes in life that you experience don't signify the change in God's purpose. God's purpose remains unchanged. And God is so much God that God will use the changing circumstances of your life to fulfill his purpose that has not changed. You see, God's purpose was to extend the line of Abraham, my grandfather, through me and through my children. And that purpose demanded protection. That's why when Laban cheated me over 10 times, God did not allow him to hurt me. Whatever changes and tricks Laban threw at me, God kept them from hurting me. And the word that I use for hurt literally means to break, means to crush. God kept the changes that Laban threw at me from achieving their intended end of breaking and crushing me. My friends, God's perpetual presence is tied to God fulfilling his providential purpose in your life. And there is a purpose that God has established within himself for you. And with God having purposed it, God then pledged himself to it. And within the pledge that God made to himself about the purpose that he's established for you, there is God's presence to protect you in the performing of it. That's why when God spoke to me back at Bethel in chapter 28, God said that he will be with me until he has performed everything that he has purposed and promised. Because God made a pledge to himself. And with God making the pledge to himself, God then pledges his presence to protect you in the performing of his purpose. Now, here's what you need to understand. God's protection does not keep you from people changing. God's presence and protection does not keep you from circumstances changing or climates changing or situations changing. His protection keeps the changes from harming you. His protection keeps them from breaking you. He keeps them from achieving their intended aim, which is to destroy you. The weapon that's formed against you does not prosper because God is keeping you for a purpose to be fulfilled. I'm talking to somebody right now who's been protected by the providential purpose of God. You know that God has kept you in the midst of changes that should have destroyed you. The weight should have crushed you, but God. The betrayal should have wiped you out, but God. God's purpose called for your protection. It called for you to be kept. It called for you to come through. When I say but God, I'm talking about the fact that I've been blessed by covenantal continuity. And I've been protected by a providential purpose. I'm talking to somebody who's had a multiplicity of things change, and all of them or any one of them could have taken you out. But because of the providential purpose of God, you've been protected. You're being kept. But there's something else. When I say, but God, I'm not just talking about being blessed by covenantal continuity. God just keeps on, keeps on, keeps on, keeps on, keeps on blessing me. That's covenantal continuity. I go to sleep and I wake up. I go to sleep and I wake up. I go to sleep and I wake. That's covenantal continuity. Every time I use up mercy from the previous day, when I wake up into brand new mercy. That's covenantal continuity. I'm protected by providential. I'm by a providential purpose. But there's something else here. I'm sustained by God's supernatural supply. Supernatural supply. You see, in the course of my dealing with Laban, Laban changed the rules of the game 10 times. 10 times Laban attempted to diminish my possibility to achieve. 10 times Laban put up roadblocks. 10 times Laban stacked the deck against me. 10 times Laban moved the bar further and further out. 10 times. And each time Laban did that, God caused me to prevail. Each time he changed the standard. Each time he went from black to spotted, and from spotted to speckled, and from speckled to striped. Each time God produced an increase. Each time God supplied. When he changed the standard to striped, God had the whole flock be striped. When he changed it to speckled, God had the whole flock be speckled. God supernaturally supplies. My friends, I just need you to understand that there is a supernatural supply that is tied to every child of God. God supplies according to his riches and glory. God opens his hand and satisfies the desire of every living thing. God supplies what is needed, when it is needed, how it is needed, where it is needed. And whenever the rules of the game change, they don't catch God off guard. God supernaturally supplies. When Joseph needed to interpret the dreams of the baker and the cupbearer, God supernaturally supplied. And when he needed to interpret Pharaoh's dreams, God supernaturally supplied. And when Pharaoh changed the game by having them make brick without straw, God supernaturally supplied. And when Pharaoh sought to lessen their number by afflicting them, God supernaturally supplied, such that the more that they were afflicted, the more that they multiplied. When Daniel needed to know and to interpret Nebuchadnezzar's dream, God supernaturally supplied. And when Belshazzar needed Daniel to interpret the writing that was on the wall, God supernaturally supplied. And when Esther needed wisdom for the handling of Haman's plot against the people, God supernaturally supplied. And when Nehemiah needed favor with Xerxes to rebuild the wall, God supernaturally supplied. And I just believe I'm talking to somebody who knows about being sustained by God's supernatural supply. What you could not produce on your own and by yourself, God produced for you and through you. You had no idea how to work it out, but God supernaturally supplied. You had no clue from where the resource was going to come, but God supernaturally supplied. You did not have the means to bring it to pass, but God supernaturally supplied. You did not have the connections to make anything happen, but God supernaturally supplied. You did not have the words to say, and you did not know how to say the words that you had, but God supernaturally supplied. Somebody can testify they kept some information from you for the project, but God supernaturally supplied. They put roadblocks and obstacles in front of you, but God supernaturally supplied. They changed the rules in the middle of the game, but God supernaturally supplied what was needed. But God, I'm blessed by God's covenantal continuity. I'm protected by God's providential purpose. I am supplied. My God, I'm sustained by God's supernatural supply. But God, that would be my mantra. As a matter of fact, that would be my final words to my son Joseph. In Genesis chapter 48, verse 21, I'd say these words: I'm about to die, but God will be with you and take you back into the land of your fathers. They would be the words that Joseph would speak to his brothers in Genesis 50 verse 20. You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. Those two words, but God, are found expressing the only place upon which the life of the believer rests. But God, Psalm 73, 26, my flesh and my heart may fail, but God is the strength of my heart and my portion forever. Psalm 34, 19, many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivers him out of them all. Psalm 94, 21, the wicked band together against the righteous and condemn the innocent to death, but the Lord has become my fortress and my God, the rock in whom I take refuge. Psalm 118, 13, I was rushed back and about to fall, but the Lord helped me. I wonder, is there anybody who can say, that's my testimony, the Lord has helped me? And when we look at Jesus, we really can't help but say, but God. I hear Peter preaching in Acts chapter 2, verses 22 and 24. People of Israel, listen. God publicly endorsed Jesus the Nazarene by doing powerful miracles, wonders, and signs through him, as you well know. But God knew what would happen, and his prearranged plan was carried out when Jesus was betrayed with the help of lawless Gentiles. You nailed him to a cross and killed him, but God released him from the horrors of death and raised him back to life, for death could not keep him in this grip. Jesus had his own but God moments. Betrayed, but God. Denied, but God. Beaten, but God. Stripped, but God. Crucified, but God. Died, but God. Went to hell, but God. Early Sunday morning, God raised Jesus from the dead with all power in his hand. And because of Jesus, you and I are now able to simply say, but God. We're able to say, but God demonstrates his own love for us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. We're able to say in Ephesians chapter 2, verses 4 and 5, but God, who is rich in mercy, because of his great love with which he has loved us, even when we were dead in our trespasses, made us alive together with Christ. For by grace you have been saved, and you've been raised up together, and he's made us to sit together in heavenly places in Jesus Christ. We're able to say, like Paul said in Acts 26, verses 22, he says, but God has helped me to this very day. So I stand here and testify to great and to small. I wonder who is out there who can say, like Paul, but God has helped me, and so I'm able to stand and testify to great and small. But God has healed you. But God has delivered you. But God has watched over you. But God has secured you. But God has strengthened you. But God has promoted you. But God has prospered you. But God has been with you. I don't care what's been against you, what's turned on you, what's changed on you. The one constant that you're able to say is but God. And that's why you are worshiping God today. That's why you lifted up your hands and talked about the Lord being the source of your strength and the very strength of your life. Because even when you were weak, God was strong. And even when you were down, God was still up. And even when you were out, God was still in. And every time, in every situation, God was able to be God and bring you back to what he had in store for you. If Jacob was alive today and he wanted to give you a but God testimony, I believe he might maim, he might ape the words of Dorinda Clark Cole when she said, so I learned to trust in God. I learned to trust in God to step right in and work it out. I learned that nobody did it but God. God still works miracles. God made a way. God still works miracles. God made a way. And because I know that God still works miracles, and I have the testimony that God made a way, I'm able to say in the midst of things changing and in the midst of things shifting, I'm still able to depend upon God, because I know that he can and I know that he will. And if I just trust in him and if I just stand on his word, I'll discover that God never fails. I discover that God will not fail me, because God is the unchanging God. God is the everlasting God. God is the living God. God is the true God. And every time God comes through, I don't take any credit for myself. I just say God did it. I just say God provided it. I just say God made the way. I just say God fought the battle. I just say God turned it around. I just say God opened the door. Who am I talking to today? Who, because you have a but God in your story, you're able to say God did it. God performed it. God worked it. God provided it. God turned it around. God lifted it. God brought it. God made it to pass. God transformed it. God transcended it. As a matter of fact, I just dare somebody to put in a post, God did it. God worked it. God provided it. God healed it. God transformed it. And because I know that God is still God, whatever I'm facing right now, I know that God will do it. God will fix it. God will make it. God will open it. God will heal it. God will deliver me. I dare somebody, lift up your hands right now in anticipation of what you know God will do.